Welcome to the Artist Academy podcast, a place where we focus on the business side of art to help you attract more customers, increase profits, and ultimately live a life of creativity and financial freedom. I'm your host, Andrea Earhart, and this week's episode features painter, writer, musician, and creativity coach, Lauren Spangler. Lauren helps artists find the sweet spot between passion and prosperity. Lauren's mission is to empower artists to enjoy the creative freedom that they crave without sacrificing the financial stability that they depend on. She has helped hundreds of professionals set and achieve their goals, and now she's here to help you unblock your inner artist and take big steps towards your biggest dreams. She also has a really fun quiz. So if you're feeling a little stuck and you're just not sure exactly what you need to do in terms of, you know, balancing your work and creative fulfillment, she has a little quiz and I've linked it here. And you can go, it's a 10-minute, you don't even have to enter your email if you don't want to. It's just something that she puts out there to help you. So I highly encourage that. But let me know what you think about this very insightful and just really interesting conversation all about balancing work and fulfillment and all of the things. Let me know what you think about this interview with Lauren Spangler. Lauren, we're going to be talking about art and business and all about your art business and how you got it started. So can you give us a little bit of background on who you are and what you do?
Yeah. Hi there. Thanks for having me, Andrea. I'm Lauren Spangler. I am a painter, a musician, a writer, and a creativity coach. I'm also a wife and a mom of two young kids. So life is very full and very fun.
Awesome. Okay. So how did you get started into this art thing and a multi-passionate artist?
Oh, melting down because nothing felt like it was working. My business was going belly up. I was just in this infinity loop of unpaid gigs. I was struggling to see how my art was ever going to afford me like the stable kind of lifestyle that I had wanted and that I wanted to have when we decided to build a family. That's actually the moment that things started to go right, even though it felt like things started to go wrong, because I started to tap into some of the understandings that really shaped how I did make artwork in the long run. At that very moment, decided to leave art forever. So I did. I flew back home, built a corporate career, stayed in that career for 7 years. And I thought things were done, like that I had outgrown this desire to be an artist. And like now I was living a good, responsible grown-up life. And that worked for a little while until I was just hit with this urge to be creative again. It was actually during my second maternity leave. I started getting hit with these like creative impulses and urges at the most inconvenient possible times, like up in the middle of the night, feeding a newborn and wanting to paint something, which felt ludicrous because as a new parent, sleep is like the number one commodity. And the thought of trading sleep to go draw something felt completely insane. But it just kept happening. And so eventually I gave into that and decided to go make stuff. And I started to keep a sketchbook next to my bed and wound up writing poetry and doing painting and all sorts of stuff. And it just came back full force. And over the course of maternity leave, I created a collection of 50 pieces that I just loved. Most of them I made with my baby like strapped to my chest and my toddler running circles around my chair or whatever. But it was just so beautiful and great. And I sort of fell back in love with the creative process and remembered why I liked it. Started sharing what I was making online and other people started liking it too, which just shocked me. The first time I ever got a request to sell my work, I actually thought it was a scam. I got a message from this man who wanted to buy something and I actually ignored it at first because I assumed it was not real. It turns out it was real and he wound up being a wonderful collector I'm still connected with and he's a repeat buyer now. So I started to build this community of people who liked what I was doing and wanted to buy it. And then the end of maternity leave came and I was at this fork in the road. Oh crap, what do I do now? Do I just let the art thing go again? How many times will this train go past before it stops coming? I don't want to do that. But then I couldn't just hand in my resignation at work and just cut our family income in half. We have two babies now and a mortgage and all those things, plus a career I was proud of and had worked hard to build. And I decided to just try to make both things work in harmony with each other. Like, how can I have the creative freedom that I want and the creative impact that I want, and also not give up the financial stability that my family is depending upon while I'm building that creative career over time? Because we all know it's a long runway, right? From that first sale to where you're actually like paying the bills. So I started just feeling through it and taking it a day at a time. And over a few months, the creative practice started to really mesh with the other rhythms of our life and in our family culture. And now we're a few years down the road and I'm happier than I've ever been. I have this great creative business that I love. I have this well-resourced family that I feel like I get to be present with. And I also have these connections with other artists through my coaching. And it's just really fulfilling and multifaceted. And now that I know the steps it took to get there, I've been helping other artists find that same thing when I see them struggling the same way I was, trying to apply some of the philosophies and tools that I've developed to help them find their own balance.
Yes. What is it about maternity leave that just turns on creating for yourself?
There's a lot there. I have wondered. Yeah.
Yeah. When I was home too, I was like, okay, I don't necessarily want to like work, but I want to paint fun balloon animals or something. Like, and it was, for me, it was like kid-centered. And I'm like, I wonder why I'm doing this. But now I'm even getting back to, even this week, I was like, I think I want to write a children's book and illustrate it. That's just, I'm so into the fun, illustrative, fun things. And so as soon as you said you just kept a notebook beside your bed, I'm like, I might just keep my iPad by my bed and just like maybe jot down a couple things before. But the only thing is once I get going and if I get to editing or get to draw, then I'm up and I'm like, oh, this is so fun. And then it's 2 a.m. and I'm like, dang it.
I lost so much sleep. Yeah, I had to eventually enforce a bedtime and say, okay, I get 45 minutes, then I have to go to bed. And I know it'll still be there when I wake up. I can pick it back up. But I do recommend digital art. The iPad was awesome to be able to do that multimedia. It's great because it's uber portable. You can jump in and jump out. You don't have a palette and brushes to clean. There's no canvas. It's a lot easier. But yeah, there's something about the playfulness and the inventiveness that happens in early motherhood that I think gets the creative spirit kind of revved up.
Definitely. Okay, so where did you get those first couple sales versus where are you getting those sales nowadays? Is it your Instagram, social media, or referrals?
Yeah. The first sales came from Instagram, and that's where most of my sales come from now.
Oh, wow. So your Instagram isn't huge either, which I think is great.
It's not.
Yeah. How many followers do you have?
Like fewer than 500. I have a very small community, but we're very well connected. And I have repeat buyers in that circle and other artists. And yeah, it feels like we have this lovely little community we've built over a few years together. And I would say there have been, it's like when I think about the main income streams for a visual artist, right? You've got your direct to collector sales, selling through a gallery, selling art prints and reproductions, which is where a lot of my income has come from. Then licensing and surface design and illustration, which I would love to get into and have never touched. And then commissions, which I have also done. And all of those leads and all those like customer relationships have come through Instagram or through personal referrals, just through my network here in my hometown.
Okay. So a variety of places, but it's okay. I just want to put again, less than 500 followers. No, I think I had more than that.
Andrea, to be honest with you, I don't look. I look at my inbox. I look at my comments section. I love to connect with people there, but I don't look at the numbers very often. So if it's over 500, I feel like I should celebrate. I'm going to go check after this.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're in a world all your own because a lot of us too are like, we got to get that number up. But no, it is about quality rather than quantity. I was just thinking the other day, I used to get so many more likes and engagement when I had less followers for some reason. And now, because like I had a couple of videos go viral and now they're just like, that number is super big, but my engagement is so, I'm like, it's a fun game, but it's, what good is it?
We assume it's linear. We assume like more followership equals more sales. And there's some truth to that. Like the larger your reach, the larger your market, that's a very real thing. But I think this beautiful thing happens when you have a tiny group, and that is that you can actually relate to them like people. Like you can actually build friendships and connections. And one of my collectors' wife's favorite colors is purple and yellow, which I remember he commented on a thing like months ago. He mentioned it's her birthday. So I sent her this little thing with purple and yellow that seems like inconsequential, right? It's like a little postcard. But the connection and the excitement of, oh my gosh, it's her birthday. I feel like celebrating her. And then she feels celebrated. And there's real relationships underneath of the transactional nature of an art business. And when you have a small following, it allows you to have enough bandwidth to really tend to those people who care about you and care about your work and want to be in your world.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's how I feel about the Artist Academy in general. There's not 1,000 people in there. We have about 200 right now, which is still a lot. But still, it's, I know people who people are when they post, and I follow them on Instagram too. And so it's, I just, you get to know those people. Whether if there was thousands, you'd be like, it's just numbers now. I don't know.
Yeah, you engage with it in a different way when you scale. I think there's a lot of good things about scaling. I look forward to scaling my audience, but there's some really nice things to be had in the smaller pond as well, and they can be lucrative. So yeah, I love it. I think it's small but mighty is a good thing.
Yeah. So is that the main force behind you getting sales? So like really having meaningful connections?
Yeah, meaningful connection. I think it's really easy now, especially for us artists who are trying to navigate the algorithm and figure out what the special sauce is to connect with new people. Sometimes I think we forget how to connect with the people who are already connected with us. And so I think there's a lot of value in remembering that if someone is following you or has made a purchase, that's there's another person on the end of that number that you can continue to connect with. And instead of thinking about the content, which content is important, it's part of marketing and marketing is important and you need strategies for all of that. So I'm not downplaying the importance of content strategy, but I do think it's incomplete if it's not really rooted in a connection strategy where you feel like you are building a connection with the people who are investing their time and energy and perhaps money in your work. And for me, that all comes back to this really fundamental question of in your own relationship with your creativity, how do you feel fulfilled and how do you feel gratified by the work you're putting in? And for me, one way I feel fulfilled is by connecting with people who like what I'm doing and who appreciate it and who like it and enjoy it. And as I've done that and connected with those people, sales have naturally followed as that connection has strengthened and grown over time. What I know is when I was trying to sell my work, I was not. And then as soon as I was just sharing my work from this deep infectious place of, oh my gosh, I love what I made. I want to share it with you. Something about that energy drew people to me who cared about it like I did and were ignited by my enthusiasm. And they started to purchase it from me. And I don't know that I've cracked the code on that specific piece of what it is about selling with no expectation to sell, but there's some sort of magic in that. And the piece that I do feel like I've crack the code on a little bit for myself is just that my creative practice and my creative marketing and sales and customer relationship building all has to be rooted in like the fundamental truths of what I'm seeking with my art. Like when I'm making it, when I'm sharing it, what really is success for me? And that goes a few layers deeper than the metrics like followership or revenue, which are all important, but the roots are a little deeper than that.
Yeah, I can totally relate because I create for other people all day and I love the numbers. And I'm like, yeah, I just want to make a lot. I have an income goal I want to do and all the things. But then after a while, I'm like, okay, I want to write a children's book or I want to do something. So we do these challenges within the academy. We just right now in the middle of the Series 6 challenge where we basically paint for ourselves 6 times in 6 weeks. Like cool. You have 6 canvases. And I'm like, let's do it because I'm so burnt out on doing what everybody else wants. But wouldn't it be nice to just do what you want all the time? And it seems like that's where you come from. And so you sell prints and then do you do commissions at all? Or
I have done commissions and right now I'm not offering any commissions because I'm working on other projects and it can be really time consuming. I do enjoy commissions with the right client. And when there's a good sort of working relationship there and they're plugged into your process in the right ways, I find it can be really fun and fulfilling. But it also can just be a huge expenditure of time. So it's not something I'm doing now. But I love what you're talking about, having this sort of free creative space to just go play and do what you want to do. And I think that's part of creative well-being. I would say creative freedom, even if it's just a small window of time. I love the idea of 6 times in 6 weeks. That's infinitely better than no times in 6 weeks. And if you could get that up to 3 times in a week or 5 times in a week, then there's certainly, it will pay dividends in the level of creative balance and openness that you feel in your other work, because you're tending to that sort of like innermost core drive and like your artist spirit is getting some sunshine. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So we create 6 paintings in 6 weeks. So it's like full paintings.
Oh yeah. So you're dipping in a lot. Okay. It's not 6 sessions in 6 weeks. It's 6 paintings in 6 weeks. Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah. Which is a little bit easier. Like in January, we do the 31-day challenge where we create a painting a day, which is smaller paintings, but it's okay. And then you're really tapping into what you want.
That's a sprint.
By the end of it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. you have my head spinning of just really reinforcing of, okay, when am I going to do this children's book? How am I going to do? And so I was just thinking today, I am somebody who chases shiny objects in this way. I'm like, I want to do these cloud paintings and then I do them. And then I want to start this book. And then I'm just like, I just have so many things that I want to do. And I've been saying I want to do a children's book for forever. And I'm like, I just need to do a couple pages at least to get the scratch the itch. And then, okay. But you paint what you want all the time. And so how do you find inspiration to do what you're painting?
I love this concept from Austin Kleon that artists are professional noticers. And that making a work of art is just turning the audience's attention to something you think is worth their time. I think that's so beautiful. And so when I'm finding myself in a block or dried up and not knowing what to make, the first question I ask is, what am I noticing? What's worth noticing? What do I want someone else to notice? What do I think? What's the little frame that I want to place someone's view into and help them slow down and recognize? And that almost always comes up, brings something up to the front. Yeah.
Yeah. What am I noticing? So what are you noticing right now?
So right now, as I look out my window, springtime is here. It's like little things are budding and pushing up out of the ground. And so right now I've been doing a lot of doodles in my sketchbook of like little plants before they've bloomed and little like the newness of all of that. The season of newness in springtime is really fascinating to me. And so my sketchbook is full of a bunch of stuff like that. I also am in the middle of sort of a fun little challenge with my folks on Instagram. Sometimes I'll put out a little question and say, what would you like to see me draw next? I'm looking for prompts for my warm-up, and people will throw out ideas. And it's always fun to work through those because people will suggest things that I never would have thought. Like someone said, you should draw a shoebill stork. And I would never in a million years have thought to go try to draw a shoebill stork, but it was great. It was a lot of fun. And so after going and doing that warm up, then I went back to the longer term projects I'm working on and I feel a little bit refreshed and revived. And like the curiosity and the play of that was exercised. And so then going back into the structure of slowly making incremental progress on these larger projects feels in balance now because there's been that little spurt of like playfulness and sharing. And for me, that's part of what I have to have for my like creative diet to feel in balance. Yeah. And then the biggest collection I've done, that one during maternity leave, was a series of images of mama and baby animals in a variety of, which no surprise, you can guess where that inspiration came from.
Yeah.
That was just me going, okay, this is a crazy time. What do I want to actually carry out of this time? What do I not want to forget? And I thought, I don't want to forget the bonding, like these moments of sweetness, this tender, precious, like moments of togetherness with my baby. Yeah, there's poopy diapers. Yeah, there's sleepless nights. Yeah, there's spit up on every piece of clothing I own. But like the things I want to carry out are this moment where we're looking at each other or snuggling, or my toddler's playing and doing something silly and it makes the baby laugh. And so a lot of my paintings from that time captured these little family moments because that's what I was noticing and that's what felt important at the moment.
Ah, that's so sweet. I love it. Okay. I'm trying to think of where to go free from here.
Let's talk about your picture book. I think you should do your picture book. I think you should. And I, when I'm working with a client, the first thing I always prescribe is if you can find it, 60 minutes a day. Which sounds like a lot, especially okay. I know you're a parent, you're running the podcast, you have this art business, like you have a lot on your plate. But if you can find an hour a day in which to just follow that little pull, like that little inkling that you have for this book and just play, like you said, start out with a couple pages, draw a spread, brainstorm what the plot could be. And when you carve out some space in your schedule to prioritize that, there's this beautiful thing that happens because you create freedom by bringing structure. If you say, I have 60 minutes, I'm protecting this time. This is my shiny object for today. Just for today, I'm going to choose this one. You'd be amazed how much you can actually explore in a span of 60 minutes and how that stacks up over time. And before you know it, you might have a picture book.
Yeah, for sure. It's so funny that you say that you do this stuff in the middle of the night because actually it was last night at midnight. I wrote the book in my notes section of my phone. I was like, this would be the first part. And it's very like rough drafted, but then it was 1 o'clock and I'm like, okay. All right, here we go. Yeah. So it's so funny how, yeah, little bits of time. Yeah, my little pocket of time is definitely going to be when my husband wants me to watch TV with him and I don't want to. And I'm just going to sit beside him on the couch and just doodle. And that way we're spending time together, but I don't want to watch what he wants to watch. So that's going to be my time.
That's a wonderful thing. Yeah. My television habit has turned into an art habit. And there have been plenty of times where I'm sitting on the couch, like half watching a stand-up comedian or like a movie or something while I'm also working on my iPad. And yeah, I think that the bits and pieces of time throughout the day, if you find the times you're able to work, you're actually able to work more than you think you are. And when you're working on something that matters to you and feels fun, it doesn't feel so much like work. It feels more like play. And yeah, I think you should. I think you should just, the next time it pops up, go meet it where it is.
Yeah. Yeah. There's something about just like taking that excitement and using it before it goes away and then it gets hard. Yeah, for sure. Okay. So this is usually a business podcast. We talk about how to make money as an artist. So what are your tips with that? I saw you have an email list.
I do have an email list. I don't use it. I haven't emailed anyone in like about a year and a half. Probably should. You should coach me on that a little bit. I need to go listen to some of your other episodes. Totally underutilize my email list, but I have been careful to collect the information of people who have made a purchase from me. So I have peace of mind. As I've gotten people into my world making purchases, I at least have kept their information organized. So I will be able to reach out to them if and when it feels right. For me, I'm really careful about marketing and the tone that I'm setting each time I'm contacting someone. The strategy of like spray and pray, like just put as much out as you possibly can, just hope it sticks. I don't like being on the receiving end of that very much. Like when I'm in my inbox and someone's there every single day with something that I didn't really ask for, I don't find that to be affection building for me, right? But when someone reaches out with a message that truly serves me and truly interests me, then I always love it. And so when I feel like I have a message that will be interesting and useful to people, at least I have my list there to go share with them.
Okay. I like that because a lot of people don't want to start an email list because it's, or they don't want to keep up with it. And you're a testament to, you don't need to, if you don't want to, if you don't have anything interesting to say, don't say
it. You can keep a list and not spam them. Like you can have the list and use it wisely. That's what I advocate for. The most helpful thing for me has been to recognize that the path to building a full-time career with my art has been so much longer than I anticipated that it would be. And so on that path, the critical piece has been keeping my creative spark alive and well through the ups and downs and like the long runway. It takes a lot of stamina to build creative income over time, or at least that's been my experience. I definitely did not have a viral anything or like any sort of big, huge boom. It was like a slow build. And for me, the thing that's been helpful there is removing the value charges around what is or isn't good income, worthy income, what any stream of income means about my value as an artist. There are times where your creative work on some level is going to pay for everything. And there are going to be times where it doesn't. And that's okay. And I think the hard part is when artists get wrapped around the axle and think like anything that I do for money that isn't painting or whatever their craft is like diminishing my credibility or my impact as an artist, because there's this stigma that if you're making money elsewhere at all, that you must not be good enough, right, to make your full living with creativity. And I think that underneath of any thriving creative business, I would say there's probably an artist with a thriving creative relationship with themselves. And that relationship is not served by us being cruel to ourselves about exactly how each dollar is coming in or telling ourselves that one type of work is more or less valuable. If it's carrying you and supporting you on your ultimate big picture goal of bringing your impact and bringing your gifts into the world, then all income is good income. And as long as it's brought in a way that balances your creative activities and allows you to have the time and space you need to really authentically make what you want to make, I say it's all good.
Yeah, definitely. Whatever makes you feel good, whatever creates ease in your daily work life. And some people are meant to have a part-time job and then do their art creatively part-time. And that way it puts less financial stress on it. I teach a lot of artists in the academy and like you can do one mural a week and that pays for all of the things and then spend the other half of the week doing your own thing. And then that's where I've settled anyway. Like I'll actually work a couple days a week and then I'll spend another couple days just doing whatever I want, like doing a painting on canvas or doing hanging out at the park with my son or something like that.
But it's important. And finding that balance is deeply personal. And I think where we struggle is when we are upside down in all of that. And that's where I think we run into burnout and deep blocks that are hard to shift. And I think a lot of artists can lose the thread entirely when they're not in balance with that. that's when it can be helpful to have the help of a community like this or of a creativity coach or someone to help you right the ship and go, okay, hold on, let's take it back to basics. What feeds you in your creative practice? How can we make sure you get that first? And then how can we align the tangible sort of reality of your day-to-day existence around that? And part of that is how can we support you and how can we support your creativity? And I just think that we need to be a little more creative in how we as artists bring our full set of skills and knowledge to bear and be creative in how we fund ourselves on that long path to building a full-time creative income.
Yeah, for sure. So how do you find this inner peace with your work and stuff? Because a lot of the artists I talk to, they're like, I got to do this and I'm so busy and I'm running around and they're just very frantic, but you're not. You're very
thank you.
Still and zen. So when did you find that?
So when I left art the first time and said, no more music, no more art, I'm done forever, and went and built a corporate job. What I really was experiencing at that time was creative burnout. And I didn't realize it until I came back to creativity and said, okay, great. It's not gone. I still want to do the thing. I still want to be an artist. And so when I made the choice to try it again, I had to build from the ground up and say, okay, last time I had a totally dysfunctional relationship with my creativity, and this time I want it to be different. And I started to think about my creativity like any important relationship in my life, like you would think of a friend or a significant other or a business partner. Like when someone is important to you, you spend certain time with them. You think of them in a certain way. You think of yourself in relation to them in a certain way. And you get really clear on what you're expecting in that relationship and what you're bringing to it. And if things aren't working in a friendship or a marriage or whatever, you can look inside and say, yeah, that's because I have heaps of expectations and I'm not being very empathetic and I'm really critical all the time and I'm a grump and whatever. Like you can do this soul searching. And so doing that in my creative life shined some light on places where I was really bringing this like frenetic energy, lots of anxiety, lots of doubt, lots of self-criticism, and really bringing this kind of difficult mentality. Like this really, I was making it really hard for myself. And that mindset and those patterns of thought and patterns of belief had to go for me to have the clarity that I needed to say, okay, I now have very little time as a new mom with a job, with two kids. Like I can't just mess around all day being in a funk. Like I'm going to have 60 precious minutes where I can go sit in my studio and make something. And I don't want to spend that time in these really negative thought loops, tearing myself apart as an artist. And so that process was a path of recognizing patterns. There are two patterns I care about. And I think any artist can look at themselves through this lens of these two patterns. The first pattern is, how are you showing up in a really tangible way? Are you coming to your studio to work consistently? Are you releasing the things that you make consistently? Are you connecting with your fans or followers or collectors consistently? What are the patterns? If you get really honest with yourself, are you showing up tangibly in the way that you want to show up as an artist and in the way that someone who really honored and regarded their art would show up? And a lot of times, the answer to that is no. And if we look a layer deeper, there's another set of patterns that I think can be equally informative. And that's the patterns around your thoughts and around like when you do come to the studio, what are the things you're often telling yourself? Or as a piece is unfolding, or if it starts to not go so well, what are the things that you jump in with in your internal self-talk? Or when you're sharing your work, what are the things that you're believing? What are the things that you're telling yourself and these stories you're making up around you and what you've made and how you're going to share it and how it'll be received? We all have these sort of internal tapes that are playing all the time. And framing the way that we're perceiving our experience and perceiving ourselves in relation to our art. And if we can get really honest with ourselves and say, okay, here are the patterns that I want in my art habit, and here are the patterns that are going to underpin that in the way I'm going to have to talk to myself and think about my art in order to keep me showing up consistently and wholeheartedly and authentically in my art habit. If we can get to that place, that's where the real transformation happens. And I would say that's what I love the most as a creativity coach is getting to walk alongside someone through that transformation and be their partner through that and help ask those questions and help dig into that with them and shine that light where it needs to be shined so they can come out the other side with this sense of peace and calm and like self-knowing and be living in the energy they want to be in on the daily level with their work.
Yeah, for sure. It's just like getting really honest with yourself and what do I like to do? And for example, I did that with myself and I was like, I really don't want to do a newsletter. Writing is okay. Like I don't want to do a blog, like, but I really enjoy making videos. And I really realized after talking to other people, oh no, I really enjoy this. Everybody else hates it. Oh wow. Like I didn't realize that's like my leg up. So if I do nothing else, I don't want to do the in-person stuff. I don't want to do the, if I do nothing else, if I just make some videos and because they're fun for me, it's like another form of painting.
Yes.
That's just my thing. And so it's like finding, and your thing is something way more meaningful than that, I can tell. So
that's great. That's it. I think we make it hard on ourselves. Sometimes we have this like bad assumption that if we really want to do something and it's really fun and easy, it must be for everyone. And it's not. And so if you just go do that thing and enjoy it and share how much you're enjoying it, like that's so contagious. And people respond to that. And it creates like this ripple effect in the universe when you're like doing the stuff you love doing. Yeah. So I always advocate that even if that thing, whatever it is that lights you up, even if that's not the thing that's paying the bills, like dedicate time, spend time with it and just allow it to be and allow it to flourish and grow. And you never know, like it might be something that there's not a gigantic mass of people doing because, for example, video is pretty terrifying for a lot of people. Like for me, it takes a lot of like mental fortitude to go be on a video. So if you love making video and that's like natural and easeful for you, you might stand out from the crowd in that way. And yeah, I love it. Find what feels good. That's the bumper sticker, I think.
Yep, that's it. Find what feels good to you and do it. And then more than likely, it'll end up being the thing that pays the bills, usually. Like, if you're in it for long enough anyway, it's going to compound and you'll eventually pay your bills, even though if it's not, doesn't take a couple months or a year. Yeah. All right. Thank you so much for coming on and expressing yourself. And just everything about this was so great. It's just, you're like reinforcing just the want to paint for myself. And I hope everybody listening paints for themselves too. And then, you know, works a little bit more of that into their art business.
I hope so too. I hope this helps. It's been such a blast to talk with you, Andrea. And I hope that as you're working on your next projects, I hope you share little tidbits here and there because I'd be excited to see what you come up with.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. So if somebody wanted to reach out to you, is your Instagram the best way or?
Actually, laurenspangler.com/spark. If someone is listening to this conversation and they're wanting to take a pulse on their own creative well-being, I've put together a quick, basically takes 10 minutes to complete. It's a self-assessment tool, runs you through 10 questions and gives you a holistic view of like where your creative relationship might be really doing well or where maybe there are some changes you could make to find more fulfillment. So yeah, you can find it there. It's totally free. Don't even need an email to download. And I hope it helps. So that's where a lot of people get connected to me and my work. And then I do hang out on Instagram. So if you want to see what's happening in my studio, I'm at Lauren Spangler, and I would love to connect there too.
Oh, I love that. A quiz, basically, to go. And so if somebody's listening to this, you're like, where can I get more inspiration? Where's the missing puzzle piece? You just go to laurenspangler.com/spark, and you can hopefully help guide you to it. I love that. I love that idea of leading somebody through something like that and choosing your own path in that way. Oh, that's awesome.
I hope it's helpful. Thank you so much for having me. This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, same. Okay, have a good rest of your day. I will talk to you later.
You too. All right, take care.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Artist Academy podcast. I've been putting out at least one episode per week for more than 4 years on this podcast. And it's really cool to see those download numbers go up and up as time goes on. And that's because artists like you listen and share these episodes. So really, when I say thank you, I mean it. It's really cool to see progress along the way. And anyway, if you like this type of art and business content, then I highly encourage you to get the audio version of my book, Mural Money, with over 15 hours of listening inspiration. I'm currently running a special of just $17 for the audio version. You can go to muralmoney.com to find it. And that comes with a bunch of extras like my art supply list, my pricing guide, recommended book and podcast list, and so much more. I filled that book with tips from my art journey of building a profitable mural career. Plus, I've included the best of the best advice from guests I've interviewed on this podcast. It's the most affordable all-in-one book of advice on art and business that I have. And if you enjoy listening to me here, then I know you'll like the book too, because I read it myself, all 15 hours of it. The book is available on Amazon and Audible normally for $25. But if you go to muralmoney.com, that is where you can grab the special $17 deal while it lasts. If you haven't listened to my book yet, this is your sign to do it. Again, normally $25, running a special for $17, but you have to go to muralmoney.com. That's where you can grab the audio version of it. And that's all I have for you today. So I will see you next week for another episode of the Artist Academy podcast.